Luke chapter 15, verses 11 through 32. It says this. And he said, there was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of my property that is coming to me. And he divided his property between them. Now many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country. And he began to be in need. And so he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to the fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. The son said to the father, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. Now, his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf, because he has received him back safe and sound. But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, look, these many years I have served you. I've never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed a fattened calf for him? And he said to him, son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated.
Well, in children's ministry, we're in the middle of the Bake It, Take It Challenge. Any kids out there that have participated in the Bake It, Take It Challenge? Couple hands out there. Well, the Bake It, Take It Challenge, for the rest of you are wondering, what is the Bake It, Take It Challenge? It was a creative way for children's ministry to try to engage kids. We bought 400 boxes of Jiffy Muffin Mix, and we asked each kid to take two home. And when they got home, they would mix up their muffins and cook them up, bake them up, and take them to somebody in their neighborhood, somebody they wanted to share Jesus with, somebody they wanted to love on a little bit, a creative way to get our kids and families thinking about how they can get the word out about Jesus Christ in their neighborhood. And we asked families to send in some photos. So here's two boys delivering their muffins in their John Deere Gator. That's delivery in style. That's pretty cool. And here's another group of kids cooking up their Jiffy Muffin Mix. I love the little girl in the back. I'm thinking that she's not quite old enough to know what's happening. And as soon as she realizes you got to give the muffins away, she's going to start crying, right? I wanted those muffins, right? Maybe. I don't know. This girl's getting a younger sibling involved, even putting marshmallows in the chocolate fudge brownie mix. She looks like a future Iron Chef of America right there. She's rocking it. Here's these kids are delivering their muffins. And I noticed there's only like two muffins on that plate. I wonder how many muffins were on that plate when it left the house for delivery. You wonder how many got eaten. Those are my two boys, my youngest boys. I have three boys, but those are the two youngest ones. Made up chocolate fudge brownie mix. They didn't want to make muffins, so they made one big chocolate cake. So we were part of the Bake It, Take It challenge as well. But I have to admit something to all of you. I was not very good at the bake it, take it challenge. You see, I like clean kitchens. And the truth is that I had just finished cleaning my kitchen, and I realize I'm a little obsessive about clean kitchens. I like to, you know, do the dishes first, and I put all the dishes in the dishwasher the way they're supposed to be put in, not the way Susie puts them in the dishwasher. And then I clean all the counters off. And then normally, at least once a week, sometimes more, I get a little obsessive compulsive. I like to wipe down all the cabinet doors. I like to organize all the glassware, make sure the cups are by the right size. I like to get on the floor and make sure that the floor is real clean. And I just finished doing one of my thorough kitchen cleaning adventures. I took the dish towel off my shoulder, hung it on the handle of the stove, stepped back feeling great about the work I had just done when my two youngest ran in and said, "We got to do the bake it, take it challenge." And I said, "No, you don't." "Yeah, we do, Dad. We got to bake it, take it. This is the challenge. We're going to bake our brownies. We're going to take them to Shelly. Shelly's this widow in our neighborhood. We like to look out for her, help her whenever we can." They were going to bring the brownies over. They were really excited. "No, Dad, we got to do this." And I said, "No, you don't. I just cleaned the kitchen." And Wyatt's like, "Dad, aren't you a pastor?" And I'm like, "Yeah, a pastor with a very clean kitchen." And I went back and forth like this for a little while until finally Susie in the other room, she's like, "You're killing their joy, Rich." "Then I'm a joy killer with a clean kitchen. I'll take it." And then they went on their bake it challenge with brownie mix going places. I don't know how it makes it where it does. It's in drawers. It's under cabinets. There's egg whites all over the place. You know how it is when kids take over the kitchen. And the whole time, I'm panicking that my kitchen is getting messy. They're messing up my system, right? I had everything right where I wanted. I had all the things lined up just the way I like it. It's making more work for me. There's going to be dishes, and I'm going to do them. And I just think of all the problems that are happening. Instead of the joy of my kids baking it and taking it, I'm thinking about my messy kitchen. I'm overwhelmed with all the way this is wrecking my evening, creating work, messing up my systems. But Jesus has a funny way of preparing you for sermons. And as we get to the beginning of Luke chapter 15, I'm pretty sure that the Pharisees are thinking exactly what I was. Jesus is messing up the kitchen. Jesus is breaking down all the systems that we created, all the systems that make us clean and right and holy, all the systems that make us feel good about ourselves. Jesus is messing them all up. He's creating more work for us. And I can just feel the Pharisees and the scribes in the first few verses of Luke 15 say, "Jesus, you're making a mess in our kitchen. What are you doing?" But Jesus is eating with sinners and tax collectors. Jesus is having his own bake it, take it challenge right there at the table, telling tax collectors and sinners about him, about life, about forgiveness, about repentance. And all the Pharisees can think about is how dirty the kitchen is getting. They even say this: "This man," referring to Jesus, "this man receives sinners and eats with them." It's the line that the Pharisees keep using over and over again to get mad at Jesus. Can you believe what he's doing? He's hanging out with sinners. And this phrase, "receives sinners," it feels like a passive word in English, right? Like he's sitting there and the sinners come over. "Hey, is that seat taken?" "No, no, you can sit there, no problem." "Hey, is that seat taken?" "No, go for it, it's okay." But this is not a passive word. This word in Greek is an active word. This is Jesus going out and looking for sinners. This is Jesus going out and embracing sinners. This is Jesus going out and seeking sinners. That Jesus is embracing them. He's receiving them. And the Pharisees are getting frustrated because it's making their kitchens messy. It's breaking down the systems they created. It's creating a mess and more work for them. And their world's crumbling around them as Jesus goes and seeks the sinners. He seeks the lost. And in the midst of this battle, as the Pharisees are looking at Jesus eating with the sinners and tax collectors, as they grow more and more anxious of what's going on, Jesus turns to them and Jesus tells them a story. Do you relate at all to the Pharisees? If I were to tell you that a new couple was joining your small group or your Bible study, they were not believers yet, would it make you feel uncomfortable, a non-believer in our small group? What about if I asked you to go and share your faith with somebody in your workplace? Would you start to sweat and panic? That would make my kitchen a little too messy. It's work, Rich. I don't talk about Jesus at work. What if we suggested that you invite your neighbor to church? Oh, now you're getting the kitchen really messy, Rich. It's my neighbor. They're going to think I'm a weirdo. What if they say no? What if they say yes? Either way, I don't know what to do. Think we can connect with the Pharisees. We can identify with the Pharisees because when it comes to seeking the lost, when it comes to looking for lost things, sometimes it just feels like our kitchen gets too dirty in the process. There's a system, there's a lifestyle, there's a way we were living that just, we don't need that. Jesus, we don't need that. But in the midst of this, Jesus looks at the Pharisees. He stops talking to the sinners and the tax collectors, and he looks to the Pharisees standing on the edges, and he says, I'm going to tell you three stories. And he begins with a short parable, the parable of the lost sheep. He says, imagine a shepherd that has 100 sheep, and one sheep goes missing. Can't you imagine that shepherd would leave the 99 behind and he'd head out into the wilderness and he'd search high and low for that lost sheep. And when he found that sheep, he would take that sheep and he'd throw that sheep over his shoulders and he would carry that sheep back home to the flock and bring it back to the flock. And then he'd call in his friends and his neighbors and he'd say, come on, let's have a party. There was a lost sheep and I found it. And I imagine as I read this story that Jesus turns right to the Pharisees and he says, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost. I feel like Jesus is inviting the Pharisees to the table. Stop standing on the edges. Stop worrying about your messy kitchens. Come on, let's celebrate that we found this sheep. And Jesus turns to the Pharisees after telling this parable and says, I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance. You catch what Jesus did there? He just told the Pharisees what heaven is doing when that sinner repents, when that sheep is found. He's basically saying, hey guys, I come from heaven. I've been there. I know what they party about. They party about this. They party about lost sheep being found. They party about repentant sinners finding life. Do you get it yet, Pharisees? Do you get the joy in finding lost things? No, the Pharisees don't sit at the table yet. So Jesus continues. What about a woman? This woman had 10 coins, 10 silver coins. It was all that she had saved. But as she sits there one night, she only counts 9. She's missing a silver coin. So she lights a lamp and she searches the house high and low, floors, ceiling, where is this coin? And when she finds it, she rejoices and she gathers her family and her friends and she says, rejoice with me, I found my lost coin. And he turns again to the Pharisees and he says, rejoice with me. I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents. But the Pharisees don't come to the table. the Pharisees are too frustrated that their kitchen is getting messy. I don't want to go seek the lost. I don't want to go find what's lost. I like what's happening now. We're in a series in Lent. We're looking at the table manners of Jesus. That as Jesus calls us to explore, we see our exploration not as a chance to add more to our lives, but a chance to align our lives with the table manners of Jesus. And this morning, I believe that the table manner that we discover is the table manner of joy. Jesus tells us it's what the Father is about. Joy in finding what is lost. That all of heaven rejoices. That the angels throw a party when one sheep is found, when one coin is found, when one sinner repents. All of heaven goes nuts for it. It's what Jesus' mission is, to seek and to save the lost. And he looks at the Pharisees that are standing on the edges, and he invites them in, and he says, come on. Come experience the joy of finding the lost. Come experience the joy of one sinner repenting. Come on and join me in my work. But it's making their kitchen too messy. And they stay on the edges. And so Jesus digs a little deeper. Jesus pushes in a little harder, and he tells a third story. There was a man, Jesus said. He had two sons. And the younger son came to the man one day and said, hey, I'd like to have my inheritance now. In actuality, what he's saying is, Dad, I wish you were dead. I know living in your house right now, like, I don't want to do this anymore. I just want your stuff. I don't really want a relationship with you. I don't like living in your house. I don't like being around you. I don't like your rules. I don't like your ways of doing things. Can you just give me what's mine so I can go have some fun and live the life I want to live? Now, traditionally, what would happen is an older son would always get double what the younger sons get. And so in this case, if he has two sons, the younger son is asking for one-third of all the father's possessions. And the older son would get two-thirds. And so this son, this selfish, ungrateful son, walks up to his dad and says, hey, just give me my stuff. I don't need you anymore. And the father obliges. And he gives away all he has. He gives one-third of all of his possessions to the younger son and two-thirds to the older son. But the younger son continues to do ridiculous things. He liquidates the assets. You see, the father wouldn't be giving bags of money or stocks to exchange. The father's giving property. He's giving land and he's giving sheep. But the younger son says, I don't want land. I don't want sheep. I want money, because out there in the world, that's what's going to get me what I want. So he sells one-third of the father's estate. This was catastrophic for the family. The land, the flock, that's how they made their living. It was catastrophic for the community. That father had hired people in the community to work his fields, to work his crops, to work his flocks. And now those people would be out of work. No, what this younger son doing is not just ripping apart a family. He's ripping apart a whole community. And he sells it all, turns it into cash, liquidates it for fun, and heads to a far-off land to live ridiculously and do ridiculous things. And I believe at this moment, Jesus has the Pharisees right where he wants them. And if we were to be there in that moment, we'd see the Pharisees squirming right now. How dare this little Jewish boy do that? How dare he treat his father that way? How dare he tear apart his family and his community? How dare he live off in Gentile lands and work with pigs and do these horrible things? The Pharisees are fuming. And Jesus keeps telling a story. And he says, and as that son lay there, he came to himself. He came to the end of himself. And as he laid there hungry in a field of pigs, he remembered his father. And he said, here I am, a hired hand, and I can't even feed myself. But my dad's hired hands, they lived pretty well. Yeah, my dad was actually a pretty good guy. You know, all that I hated, I think my dad was actually a pretty loving, compassionate man. Oh, I want to be back where my dad is. And so he devises a plan. He says, I'm going to go to my dad. I'm going to tell my dad, Father, I have sinned against heaven. Father, I have sinned against you. And I know that I am no longer worthy to be your son. But just let me be your hired hand. Let me make it up to you. Let me pay you back in time. Yes, that's what I'll do, the son said. And he got up out of that pigsty and he started taking the long journey back to home. And this is where Jesus says, you want to tell me I receive sinners? Wait till this. And as we get to this point in the story, we see the father. And the father isn't working in the fields when he sort of randomly looks up and sees his son. The father isn't busy in the house when he looks out the window and sees his son. No, the father is waiting, and he's been waiting. The father is sitting on the front stoop of the house day and night, his eyes on the horizon, hoping, waiting, watching for his son to return. And when he sees his son's frail body walking down the road a distance away, the father picks up his robes. He shows his legs, which no patriarch should ever do. If there wasn't enough shame on the family, now there was going to be shame because the father picks up his robes and he starts running down the road to greet his son. And he finds his son and he tackles him and he kisses him and he screams for joy, my son, you're back. And the son begins his speech. Father, I've sinned against you. I've sinned against heaven. But the dad's done. Hey, bring some robes. Bring a ring. Bring some shoes. My son is back. And before the son can even finish his rehearsed statement, he's wearing a robe. He's wearing a ring. He's wearing shoes. And as the son returned, hoping to just be a hired hand, the dad makes him a son again. Can you imagine how uncomfortable this made the Pharisees feel? Jesus knows it, so he writes them into the story. And he says, hey, Pharisees, you remember the older brother? That's you. You see, the older brother was out in the fields, Jesus says. And he heard the music and the dancing as the house began to celebrate, as they prepared the fattened calf for this wonderful meal, as they invited the whole town to come and to celebrate that his son had returned. The older son hears the music and he grabs the servant and he says, what's going on inside? And the servant says, your brother came back. Your dad's throwing a party. We're going to eat the cow. Oh my goodness, it's going to be so much fun. We're going to party all night long because the lost son has returned. And the older son says, they're making the calf in my kitchen. Oh, my kitchen's going to be a mess after this party. And everything that he wanted, all these systems are getting blown up. All this that the older son thought would happen is not. And all this is going to cost him something to celebrate his younger brother's return. And he's just angry about it. And the father, like he went to the younger son, comes out of the house to the older son. He says, come on inside. The son says, no way. Jesus looks at the Pharisees as if to say again, are you guys going to join me at the table? Are you guys going to find joy in seeking out lost things? Or are you just going to stay there and be all grumpy about your dirty kitchen? See, Jesus wants us to know something. He wants us to know that there's a little older brother in all of us. And he wants us to know how to identify it in ourselves. First, he says that the older brother is angry. He's really angry. It's the first thing we hear about him. Verse 28, but he was angry. See, when you think that your goodness gets you into heaven, when you think you've been living so rightly that that has earned your place in the Father's house, that whenever something goes bad in life, you just get angry about it because deep down you go, I don't deserve bad things happening to me. And likewise, when good things happen to bad people, it makes you angry too. Because you go, that person isn't following any of the rules, and they got that. I'm doing all this for dad, and he gets the party. Older brothers get angry because somehow they think that their right living provides a place or earns them a place in the Father's house. But they're not just angry, they're tired. In verse 29, the son says, look, these many years I have served you. The Greek says, actually, this many years I have been slaving for you. And you give him a fattened cow? Do you hear the exhaustion in this older brother's voice? Because he's trying desperately every day to earn his place in the Father's house. He's doing everything he can to be in right standing with his Father. And the truth is, he's just tired because life of following or living for his Father has become a duty and not a delight. And so he's tired. He's tired of the grind of following Jesus, following his Father day and night. You know, the older brothers, we get angry, we get tired, and we feel superior. Look at that. In verse 28, he refused to go into his brother's party. In verse 30, in referring to his brother, he says to his dad, but when this son of yours came home, he won't even call him his brother anymore. Because when we think that our righteous living has given us a good standing with God, then when other people mess up, we go lazy, foolish, undeserving. And we make ourselves feel so superior to everyone else. Older brothers are angry. Older brothers are tired. Older brothers feel superior. Older brothers don't have any joy for finding lost things. So what do we do? What do we do when we sense that we're a little older brotherish? What do we do when we don't want our kitchens to get messy? When the idea of reaching the lost, when the idea of telling our neighbors about Jesus Christ or our coworkers, or the idea of making brownies in the kitchen for the widow down the street starts to mess up our life too much, what do? We remember. We remember that once we were lost sheep. And we are lost coins. And we are younger brothers. And that not only did we have a father that was waiting at the footsteps, looking for us to come back to him, but he did something even more remarkable. He sent his son to look for us. Hebrews 12:2 says that for the joy set before him, Jesus endured the cross. For the joy of finding lost things, that's you and that's me, Jesus endured the cross. For the joy of finding what was lost, he was forsaken so that we could be saved. For the joy of finding what was lost, Jesus was stripped bare so that we could be clothed in the robes of righteousness. For the joy of finding what was lost, Jesus was wounded so that we could be healed. For the joy of finding what was lost, he gave up his position so that we might become sons and daughters. For the joy of finding what was lost, he died so that we might live. Jesus finds so much joy in finding the lost. Heaven rejoices when sinners repent, when lost sons and daughters return home to their father. But we get so upset about our messy kitchens. Maybe we can become a people. We can become a people who find joy in seeking the lost. And that even when it gets messy and uncomfortable and costs us something, we would be willing to align ourselves with Christ and the joy that he has for finding lost things. And we would open our mouths to our neighbors and our coworkers and our friends, and we would share Jesus Christ with them so that all of heaven may rejoice. May we as a community find joy in seeking lost things, because Jesus found joy in seeking us.